Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Casey Seiler, state editor and Capital Bureau chief for the Albany Times Union, and one of the hosts of Public Television's New York Now, a statewide political program. Tune in. Welcome back, Casey.
Alan, it's great to be here.
Yeah, well, I got a lot of questions to ask you. The first is New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is keeping the heat on New York Republicans to disown Donald Trump after the GOP presidential candidate's coarse remarks about women revealed in a video over the weekend. Is this going to hurt the GOP in New York State?
It's not going to help. It has placed Republican candidates, especially those in close races, and we're talking about everything from the local level to state legislative races, and especially in many tight congressional races, probably nowhere more so than in the 19th district, which stretches from the outskirts of Binghamton all the way to the lower Hudson Valley and then up into Rensselaer County, where Democrat Zephyr Teachout is just hammering Republican John Faso over this issue. Faso has said, look, I said I was going to support the GOP ticket. Trump is the nominee of the party, while at the same time saying that the behavior that came out last Friday, this video of Trump and Billy Bush exchanging really ugly, lewd talk about what Trump says he can get away with women, including grabbing their genitals because he's a celebrity, he says. But Faso has said that behavior is absolutely appalling, you know, as a husband, as a father, which is the expressions that you're getting from lots of GOP politicians. And Faso has also said he hasn't decided yet who he's going to vote for. So the question is, how do you straddle that, saying, I support the GOP ticket, I don't know yet if I'm going to vote for Trump? Kind of begs the question, we're now less than a month away from Election Day. How much more do you, as a Republican politician who is fairly plugged into national politics, need to hear before you make up your mind?
Well, there's a couple of things here that are obvious. And the last thing we saw was a poll out which showed Faso beating Teachout by 1 percentage point.
Neck and neck. That's so within the
margin of error, right? Then this thing comes out. And Paul Ryan, the speaker, says, save yourselves. You know, to everybody. Faso says, where are all these ads coming from that Teachout is running? Meaning, who's giving her money? That's the way that he's trying to get at her. What do you make of that?
Well, her campaign has put out a video on Monday saying, you know, career politician John Faso, which is their chosen appellation for him. You know, he's a former state lawmaker, can't even denounce sexual assault. Can he truly be an independent voice in the district? Now, that's taking it a little bit far because, of course, Faso has denounced the expressions that Trump made on that video. But it's clearly, once again, placing Faso in a tough spot. Faso responds and notes that last year, Zephyr Teachout, in an op-ed that appeared on the Huffington Post, said Hillary Clinton has four corruption challenges, corruption problems, and they were all related to her campaign or the Clinton Foundation taking donations or fees, speaking fees from big money sources, whether it's the Goldman Sachs speeches that we've heard so much about, including last week in the leaked campaign emails, or the Clinton Foundation taking big money from overseas sources as well as domestic sources. And so basically, Faso's point is that Teachout has not been challenged to explain why she is now supporting Clinton when she said that about Clinton last year, and he is being held to, as he puts it, a different standard.
So what about the governor in all of this? We've seen a different Andrew Cuomo, I believe, lately than we saw before. He doesn't seem as aggressive. You know, two of his closest friends are now been what we call informationalized or indicted.
Well, one has pleaded guilty to multiple felonies, Todd Howe. The other one has not yet been indicted but has been named in a criminal complaint. The indictment will probably come in the next couple of weeks.
So there you are. So Cuomo and Hillary, how do they do together? After all, he was in the cabinet.
Well, in the weeks leading up to this latest episode, it had been noted by several journalists. Jimmy Vilkind of Politico New York did a very good piece on that, that Cuomo had been sort of pulling in his horns a little bit whenever he was asked about Trump. that he sort of missed or kind of sidestepped multiple opportunities to really hammer him, despite having lots of ammunition. But clearly with this episode, with the Billy Bush, the Access Hollywood video, Cuomo has gone full bore. And he even has tacitly called out Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan, who has basically said the same thing that Faso said. These expressions are ugly. I will continue to support the GOP ticket, but I am really concentrated on my fight, which for Flanagan, of course, is maintaining the GOP's very, very narrow majority, which isn't even really a majority because it requires the collaboration of a sort of breakaway Democrat Simcafelder.
Casey Siler, Preet Bharara is a guy who everybody wants to talk to. Not many people get interviews with him, but you did.
Yeah, he was in Albany last week at the College of St. Rose to take part in what was a very good panel discussion on the subject of bribery in the context of a couple of recent U.S. Supreme Court decisions, including the McDonald decision, which basically constrained federal prosecutors to only go after public officials for accepting in quid pro quo cases. Prosecutors will now need to demonstrate that an actual act of government was essentially provided to the alleged briber.
So in other words, if you do this for me, you get a guy on the telephone, if you do this for me, I'll provide you with a government service back.
Well said, exactly. And the government service can't be just saying, hey, I'll call a guy to set up a meeting, because that is determined to be something that would be done for pretty much any constituent that politicians just do in the normal course of the day. It has to be pushing through a grant, as was done in the case of Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, or it has to be, you know, pushing through a bill that the person who is essentially giving you the quid, as it were, you know, wants or needs for his or her company.
Now, into all of this comes one of the Cuomo favorites, Elaine Calieros. Just hot off the press, we are learning that Elaine Calieros, the embattled once powerful head of the State University high-tech institution, has formally resigned his position. What do you make of that?
That is not at all surprising. I noted in my column in the Times Union on Sunday that it was almost impossible to imagine that Calieros would be coming back. Once again, he has only been charged both by U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara in the federal case that Bharara has brought. He is also facing state charges brought by Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, charged in both cases with bid rigging, with basically working with developers to arrange bids for SUNY Polytechnic projects. SUNY Polytechnic, where Calieros was the guru, you know, the founding president, the CEO, and really the face of SUNY Polytechnic. He was the one who orchestrated and pushed for SUNY Polytechnic's divorce from the University of Albany to become essentially a sovereign entity within the SUNY system. And with the great help of Andrew Cuomo, spread SUNY Poly to Utica, to Rochester, to Syracuse, to Buffalo for these enormous projects that are now in the crosshairs of both state and federal prosecutors. So it's not a surprise to see him gone. It is a remarkable fall within a very short space of time. He was once the highest paid public official in New York.
And some people have said, you know, that he was slated to be the next head of the whole State University of New York. I have no idea whether that has any validity to it. But we do know that the present chancellor has resigned.
She's running out the clock. This is going to be the last academic year that she oversees, but she's going to be gone next summer.
Nancy Zimfer, a big favorite of mine. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about Bharara. When you talked to him, did you get a sense of what his timetable was in terms of his position?
No, I asked him, is this a job? Federal prosecutors serve at the pleasure of the president. You know, one way or another, we're going to have a new president in January. And I asked him, is this a job that you see yourself that you would like to be doing at this time next year? And he said, and he's very cagey when it comes to talking about things like that. He's super cagey when it comes to ongoing investigations, such as the upstate development investigation that they're doing now. He said that's for other people to decide, which of course it is, but whoever is going to be the next president in particular. But he said, I love my job. I love my job more today than I did when I started. He's been doing it for 7 years. That's a long chunk of time to do anything, especially a job as intense as being U.S. Attorney for the Southern District.
He could make a lot of money on the outside, couldn't he? A lot more than he's making as a U.S. Attorney.
He absolutely could, without a doubt. And, you know, the open question, which he's been asked a couple of times, including, I believe, by you, is would he ever consider going for elective office? And he's always said no. He's always quoted Bruce Springsteen and yes, said, I am not born to run.
Yeah. So let's go to the state Senate. Now, this is fascinating. Look, anybody can believe anything they want. I believe, personally, Alan Shartok believes that Andrew Cuomo has wanted a Republican state Senate from the beginning, like his father did before him. And nobody knew the father better than I did, I should say, because, you know, he had him on a program for 18 years or something like that. But they both wanted it because it's, in my opinion, it meant that they didn't have to go out, tell their liberal friends that they couldn't have something. The state Senate could be used for that reason. So now, what do you think? Cuomo is being attacked from the left. And the left in his party doesn't like the fact that he's been doing this. It's a well-known fact now, supporting the Republicans. So all of a sudden, I think we're seeing signs that maybe he thinks the game is up.
Well, yeah, I think he's probably reading the exact same polls that we're all reading. In New York State, Hillary Clinton has a very, very large advantage, which, if current trends continue, is only going to get larger.
You know what percentage is, like 20%?
It's more than 20 points.
Yes.
Last time, there was a Siena poll. It was more than 20 points. There are certainly parts of upstate and in the suburbs where that gap is much narrower. There are certain parts of upstate where Trump is in the lead, you know, especially yeah, in, you know, rural areas, sparse population, that type of thing. But clearly, everything is, the tidal wave is definitely serving the needs of Democrats in this election, especially in New York. Now, there are still very, very tight races. And you also have to factor in the idea that if Republicans only lose a handful of seats, maybe one or two or maybe even three, they might be able to maintain their coalition with the 5-member independent Democratic conference.
Some
Jeff
people
Klein,
call them the traitors, right?
Some people do, and
me,
some people
I
say,
do.
And some people say they're working for effective state government.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
This is Jeff Klein's group of five. Now, that group said in 2014 that they were looking forward to partnering again with Senate Democrats. From what I have heard, there has been outreach made, just as Andrew Cuomo reads polls, Jeff Klein and Diane Savino and Dave Valesky and, you know, all of the members of the IDC can read polls as well. If the GOP loses, I would say, more than two seats, three maybe on the cusp, I think it becomes very, very difficult for the IDC to empower Republicans in the way they did for 2 years, 2013 and 2014, where the GOP really needed the IDC in order to hang on.
Well, let's get down to it, Casey. If the governor calls the IDC, or the people I call the traitors, the Democrat traitors, into his office, look, boys and girls, you're going to go back and you're going to go back with the Democrats where you belong or else.
I don't even know if that call has to be made. I really don't think so. I think there might be overtures, there might be kind of readings of the I Ching that would be made by these politicians, but I think, you know, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, and you don't need Andrew Cuomo to tell you when Democrats are taking over the state Senate.
So Casey Seiler, a lot of people are transfixed watching the trial over Bridgegate. We know that Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, is in real trouble over this. He apparently knew about it while it was happening real time. We've all learned that. But now there's been some interesting scuttlebutt about Andrew Cuomo, who is a, you know, half owner of the Port Authority, if you want to put it that way, and what his role has been.
Yeah, the testimony in the Bridgegate trial, and once again, this is the scandal over the creation of a massive traffic jam in Fort Lee on the New Jersey side of the George Washington Bridge that was organized and engineered by Christie's underlings, allegedly, definitely by David Wildstein, who was one of his appointees to the Bi-State Port Authority.
Who has pleaded guilty.
Who has pleaded guilty and is the star witness in the trial of two other former Christie aides, including, you know, one of his most confidential assistants. And what Wildstein said is that he was told by David Sampson, I believe his name is, who was another official, a chairman at the Port Authority, that there had been a conversation between the governor, Governor Cuomo, and Governor Christie, in which it was agreed that Pat Foy, who was a New York appointee, Cuomo appointee to the Port Authority, who really kind of found out that these shenanigans were going on and tried to put a stop to it, that Pat Foy essentially would stand down because this scandal was messing with Chris Christie's reelection.
Stand down, meaning he would not pursue aggravation with what the New Jersey guys were doing.
And that they would agree to putting forth this cover story that there was a traffic study. That was Wildstein's excuse for essentially blocking lanes coming into the George Washington Bridge. Now, Wildstein made it very clear that this was something that he had heard about from Sampson, who had pleaded guilty to a kind of not quite related felony, also related to shenanigans at the Port Authority, though. And no one has yet, no principal witness to that conversation or a principal who heard directly from either of the governors about this alleged conversation has come forward. Now, this trial is going on still. And there might be a corroborating witness who comes forward. But right now, the governors on both sides can say, first of all, one, Wildstein is convicted.
He's a felon.
He's a liar. He's a felon. And this is hearsay. At the same time, if Wildstein lies on the stand, any agreement he has with federal prosecutors goes away, and he could really ride the lightning. So there is no reason for Wildstein to lie about this.
Except for the devil's advocacy here. You know, he may be telling the truth, but it's still hearsay. Somebody told him that these two governors had an embarrassing conversation. But, you know, that's hearsay, right? In court, that's not really helpful.
Correct. Yeah, which is probably why Chris Christie is not facing charges in the Bridgegate matter. Governor Cuomo certainly isn't facing charges in the Bridgegate matter. And it's unclear, even if everything that Wildstein said is true, it's unlikely if that would rise to the level of a potential federal crime. It would certainly be embarrassing. It would absolutely positively be embarrassing for, it would be very damaging to Christie. It would certainly be embarrassing to Cuomo. And I think his administration did not see this coming, especially not within a 2-week period after they were already facing the firestorm of the Howe Prococo Calieros case.
Let's talk, Andrew, for a moment. He clearly has said he's going to run for a third term. Has he been damaged? I mean, there will be people who say, yeah, he's been damaged, all of his top advisors and all the rest of it. But in the end, is there any polling or anything that indicates that he can't win a third term?
No, absolutely not. And you have to remember that what he has going for him is the fact that there are not a lot of viable Republican alternatives that have yet stepped forward. I think you, in other words, the GOP hasn't even settled on even a long list of potential candidates in 2018. Rob Astorino, the Westchester County executive,
who lost on the last time,
who lost badly the last time, has said that he might be up for it again. Is Cuomo wounded? Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely been wounded by the Howe Prococo, you know, the state and federal upstate development investigation and charges. Now, what he has going for him at this point is the fact that we're still 2 years out from what would be his second attempt at reelection. So these cases might be resolved, and they might be resolved with no witnesses saying that the governor knew anything about any of these matters while they were going on. That, of course, is still a management issue. If he knew about it, he's in big trouble. If he didn't know about it, it's embarrassing because it makes him look like an ineffective or disconnected executive. But also, there are no Republicans who are stepping forward. Chris Gibson, Republican who is about to resign, would be a very interesting candidate, a capable, intelligent guy who I think we would both agree is from sort of the moderate end of the Republican Party.
Absolutely, and has been in these studios where you're sitting now many times.
Yeah.
I always have admired him.
Yeah, a very, very smart dude. And he's going to teach at Williams College. He's essentially getting out of the political business.
And I'm going out of politics and I'm not basically coming back. That's amazing.
Which is something that I think we as a society, and I hate sentences that use that phrase, need to kind of worry about when worthy people like that essentially stay in. He's been in for, what, about 7 years now? Yeah. He's the kind of guy you really wish, knowing what he knows now about politics, about working the gears and levers of government, I, for one, want him to stay in. We've been talking now about how bad it is for democracy when a candidate who is so handicapped as Trump is gets into a presidential election. It drags down the discourse, without a doubt. You know, Gibson, I think in every race he has run, has kept it really above board. I mean, those races have been pleasures to cover because at debates, I've moderated debates involving him. They're always good exchanges.
Last question before we have to let you go, because, and I hate to do that, and that is, there is a quote now from Speaker Hastie, Boss Hastie, as I sometimes call him, that if there's a raise, it should be on its own. It should not be tied to we'll get this raise if something else happens. What is that about?
Carl Hastie, the Speaker of the Assembly.
You call him Carl. I call him Boss.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, I won't. But he weighed in last week with his
longest... He was longest, the Bronx before.
His yeah. longest argument yet in a letter that was sent to this pay panel that next month, after the election, will have to make recommendations on whether or not both executive branch employees and state lawmakers ought to get a raise. They haven't gotten a raise in 17 years now. And Hastie argued, absolutely, it's ridiculous that lawmakers haven't gotten a raise in this long. No cost of living increase, nothing, especially when many of them, the majority of them, live in New York City or, you know, the suburbs around New York City, where the cost of living has, in many cases, exploded, including housing costs.
You don't see many of them quitting, though.
You see some of them quitting, yeah, and you also see the ones who are coming in perhaps not being of the finest quality simply because they worry about supporting their family.
You mean the ones who are there now are of the finest quality?
No. I'm not saying that at all. There are many, many, the vast majority of people who work in the state legislature, elected officials in the state legislature, work hard. You can politically disagree with them or not, but they work hard. They try to do the best for their constituents. There is, without a doubt, a minority of lawmakers there who are there for the wrong reasons, you know, whether they're there because they want to enrich themselves or because they want to gain nothing more than political power. But that's the way it is in every elected body, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, whether you're talking about France or New Guinea or you name it, that's always the way it is.
You sound like Donald Trump. Two wrongs make a right.
That is not what I'm saying at all, sir.
And, you know, it sounds a little like Superman in other
Wait,
worlds.
Is there anybody working here at WAMC who hasn't gotten a raise in the last 17 years?
On the contrary.
Right.
Everybody here has gotten a raise.
Yeah, right.
Because they deserve it, as opposed to these clowns.
Strong words. Yes, but, and so anyway, there is going to be another meeting of the Pay Commission. What the members of the Pay Commission have said, and remember, this is appointees of the judiciary, the two legislative bodies, and the executive branch, they all need to agree on these recommendations before they can go through. Lawmakers will have a chance, if they want to come back to Albany, to shoot the recommendations down, but they don't have to affirmatively support them.
And I say the game is rigged. Anyway, we're out of time for the wonderful Casey Seiler. He is a favorite here, state editor and Capital Bureau chief of the Albany Times Union, and one of the hosts of the widely acclaimed public television New York Now, a statewide political program. Thanks so much, Casey.
Good stuff, Alan. Thanks.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.